Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It's about that time. Coming to you live on the campus of Michigan State University inside of Studio West. At the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences, it is time for current sports. I am your host, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870, 105.1 FM. We've got a lot of flavor that will be kicked into your ear throughout these next 60 minutes. On today's current sports, we will provide an update on the Michigan State lawsuit from a Jane Doe, alleging that 3 years ago, in 2015, she was raped by three Michigan State men's basketball players. And when she went to the Michigan State Counseling Center, she was discouraged from coming forth. So Michigan State has issued a statement. We will provide that statement to you all in just a moment. I will have brief, and I do mean brief, thoughts on it. I'm more so curious as to what our listeners have to say about this whole situation and have to say about the statement that I am going to read live here on the air. More so curious with public opinion at this point now, because I spent the majority of yesterday's current sports providing my thoughts on the whole situation. If you missed it, you can just simply go to WKAR.org, listen to the podcast. You can also go to the WKAR YouTube page and actually post it. We actually posted that segment on our YouTube page as well. So we'll comb through that statement. Also, the NBA playoffs are now set. We know which 16 teams will be competing for the Larry O'Brien Trophy. And I don't know if you guys know this, but when it comes to the NBA, this day is always dubbed Black Thursday. Because it's the day right after the NBA regular season is in the books and many of the lowly teams in the league decide to make immediate changes. Changes such as coaching firings. So already, we've seen two NBA coaches get the boot. And of course, the local question pertaining to your Detroit Pistons is whether or not Stan Van Gundy will be brought aboard for a fifth season. You'll get my thoughts on that. We have been touching on that topic throughout this week. And for the first time this season, we have heard Stan directly address what is now going to take place in the offseason when it comes to a conversation between himself and Detroit Pistons owner Tom Gorris. We'll actually play a snippet of what Stan had to say after last night's regular season finale against the Chicago Bulls. We will then usher in segment B with two of my favorite guests, Maya and Gene Washington. Gene Washington is one of the more coveted names in Michigan State football history, one of the greatest players to ever rock the green and white on the gridiron. Well, Gene and his daughter, primarily his daughter put together this documentary that talks about how Duffy Doherty, the famed college football teams of the 60s, how Duffy integrated the game of college football and how that sent a ripple effect across the nation as it pertains to the sport. Well, Maya has a documentary entitled Through the Banks of the Red Cedar that will actually premiere this weekend. A two-day premiere. Maya and Gene will talk about this fantastic film. You don't want to miss that. And on the back end of the show, it's Thursday. And as you know, each and every Thursday, we love to dive into some sports history and take a look at exactly what happened on this particular date in sports history. We call it Throwback Thursday. We'll do all of that while, of course, inviting you all to be a part of the fun. You know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. You can also join us via social media, two ways in which you can do so. Our live stream is up and running at facebook.com/WKAR News. Watch the live stream there. Comment below the video. I will do my best throughout this hour to get to your comments, and you can even tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, and we start with the news of the week here in mid-Michigan. Michigan State University has denied the claims made by a female student who filed a Title IX lawsuit on Monday alleging that the university failed to provide her adequate support and services after she reported being raped by three Michigan State men's basketball players 3 years ago in 2015. I'm not going to read the entire statement right now. I'm going to do that to usher in segment A in a matter of minutes. But Michigan State has come out and issued a statement on this. Keep it locked. I'll have that for you in just a moment. All right, the Michigan State softball team dropped its second straight contest, a 1-0 loss at Michigan in Ann Arbor last night. Christina Zalewski and Michigan freshman pitcher Megan Bobian engaged in a pitcher's duel. Zalewski surrendered just 5 base hits in the contest, striking out 3 and did not allow a walk. But Bobian was spectacular, overcoming an early high pitch count to surrender just 2 base hits to the visitors, striking out 7. Ebony Eccles had a first pitch, well, I should say a first inning triple, the 22nd of her career, to move her into a tie for third place in the all-time Big Ten career standings. The lone run of the game for the Wolverines came in the fourth when they put together 3 base hits to bring across pitch runner Nikki Wald. The Spartans, 14-22-7 in the Big Ten Conference, had one other hit, a 6th inning 2-out single from Leah Forrester. The Spartans now head to State College this weekend for a 3-game series versus Penn State. The first game of the series will take place tomorrow at 6 p.m. Michigan State baseball, impending inclement weather in the weekend forecast, has adjusted Michigan State's weekend non-conference series with Valparaiso, as the Spartans and Crusaders will now play a doubleheader on Friday and a single game Saturday at McLane Baseball Stadium at Cobbs Field. Tomorrow's doubleheader will start at 12:05 p.m., with the second game slated to start approximately 30 minutes following the completion of Game 1. The series will wrap up with a single game scheduled for Saturday at 1:05 p.m. This weekend series between MSU and Valpo is the first meeting between the Spartans and Crusaders since 1994 and Valpo's first visit to East Lansing since 1987. Michigan State is wrapping up its 10-game homestand with its second straight non-conference opponent from the state of Indiana after Tuesday's contest against Notre Dame. Also, a big congratulations is in order for a certain high school girls basketball player that we have been following since really her freshman campaign. But a big congrats is in order for Okemos High School baller Leia Hartman, who will be continuing her basketball career in the Big Ten. Hartman, the Okemos standout junior, announced yesterday evening her verbal commitment to play at Northwestern. She's 5'10". Hartman averages 16.8 points, 7.5 rebounds, almost 2 assists per game, while helping Okemos win a Class A district title last year and to a runner-up finish in the CAAC Blue. She surpassed 1,000 career points in February and earned AP All-State recognition this season. We hope to have Hartman a part of Current Sports sometime next week. Also, local high school sporting news to pass along in addition to the Hartman story. East Lansing High School has announced the retirement of boys soccer coach Nick Archer, one of my favorite coaches in the area. He began the program in 1977 and served all 41 years. He also coached the girls program, stepping down after the 09 season. Archer's teams won 5 state titles, most recently in 2014. His career record is 660 wins, 177 losses, and 75 ties as boys coach. No replacement has been named. EL has also posted its vacant boys head basketball coaching position as well. All right, Detroit Tigers pitcher, a scary moment yesterday. Detroit Tigers pitcher, Jordan Zimmermann, was taken to the hospital with a bruised jaw after he was hit by a line drive off the bat of Cleveland's Jason Kipnis yesterday. The Tigers said Jay Zim passed concussion protocol test and was being taken for x-rays. Making his third start of the season, Zimmermann retired Francisco Lindor on a fly ball starting the game. The 31-year-old right-hander had little time to react to Kipnis' liner on a 2-2 pitch. Quote, "I tried," he said. "I saw it fine. I just had no chance of getting the glove up fast enough." Zimmermann, who threw 7 pitches, also posted a message saying that he's okay on his Twitter account last night. But that is always a scary thing in baseball when you see a line drive hit approach anywhere near the head of a pitcher on the mound. Glad that Jay Zim is doing fine. All right, the Detroit Lions announced the team's 2018 NFL preseason opponents, which includes a nationally televised game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Friday, August 2-4, week 3 on CBS. The Lions open with a road contest against the Oakland Raiders in week 1 before hosting the New York Giants in week 2. And Cleveland Browns in week 4 at Ford Field. Home opponents, the Chicago Bears, Green Bay Packers, Minnesota Vikings, Carolina Panthers, LA Rams, New England Patriots, New York Jets, and Seattle Seahawks. The road Warriors they will have to face are the Chicago Bears, Green Bay Packers, Minnesota Vikings, Arizona Cardinals, Buffalo Bills, my Dallas Cowboys, Miami Dolphins, and the San Francisco 49ers. And also, the NBA playoffs are now set. The Minnesota Timberwolves defeated the Denver Nuggets last night for the 8th and final seed in the NBA's Western Conference playoffs. That was a 112-106 final. Went down to the wire. An incredibly entertaining game to watch. Also, the Timberwolves snap the longest current playoff drought in the NBA. First time that the Wolves are in the postseason since the 03-04 campaign. But this is how your matchups look. In the Western Conference, the Houston Rockets will take on the Minnesota Timberwolves, 1-8. The number 4 Oklahoma City Thunder will take on the number 5 Utah Jazz. The number 3 Portland Trailblazers will play the number 6 New Orleans Pelicans. And the second seed Golden State Warriors will take on the 7 seed San Antonio Spurs. In the NBA's East, the top seeded Toronto Raptors will play the 8th seeded Washington Wizards. The 4 seed Cleveland Cavaliers will play the Indiana Pacers, who are the 5 seed. The 3 seed Philadelphia 76ers will take on the 6 seeded Heat, Miami Heat. And the 2nd seeded Boston Celtics will take on the 7 seed, the Milwaukee Bucks. We'll have more on the NBA playoffs. We'll have more on Black Thursday in the NBA. And we'll have more just in general. All right, we've got a jam-packed show, so let's keep this train moving. Again, if you would like to be a part of the hour, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. Here we go.
you know, usually the first week or so, I mean, I don't do much of anything. So, you know, I'm going to sleep and rest and, you know. And then whenever Tom wants to meet, we haven't set a time yet. Whenever he wants to meet, we'll talk. And, you know, regardless, I mean, I'm under contract. So, yeah, you know, until he tells us anything different, I mean, we'll move ahead. But it'll be, you know, it'll be 7 to 10 days before I'll get back to work.
That's what I meant. Like, when will you, like, be back to looking at?
You know, probably a little bit next week. But just that'll be more cleanup from the season. And then the week after, you know, I'll start putting some thoughts on paper. I've already put some on paper. You know, as you move ahead, you want some things fresh in your mind. And I probably won't get into watching film and stuff until May.
Ah, yes. Happy Thursday. It's a beautiful day here in mid-Michigan. Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. If you're just now tuning in, we are coming to you live from Studio S on the campus of Michigan State University, right here on WKAR AM 870, 105.1 FM. Or if you're not listening via radio, thanks for tuning in via the podcast at WKAR.org. Or if you're even watching the Facebook live stream at facebook.com/WKAR News. Really appreciate allowing WKAR's Current Sports to be a part of your day. Got a lot to get to. You just heard the voice of Stan Van Gundy. Right now, still the head coach of the Detroit Pistons, the NBA's regular season to bed. Thank goodness, because I tell you what, I was getting a little bit tired. Even though I'm a diehard NBA guy, I was getting a bit fatigued watching meaningless games down the stretch. Teams who have already clinched playoff position rest their superstars. Let's get to it now, all right? The NBA playoffs begin this weekend, Sunday. And today marks what we call in the NBA world Black Thursday. Because as soon as the NBA regular season is done, you start to see the very next day on a Thursday, a lot of head coaches who did not get the job done fired. We've already seen two so far. Frank Vogel, he has been fired by the Orlando Magic. Also, Jeff Hornacek, he has been fired as head coach of the New York Knicks. So those are the two that I've seen so far. And here locally, we are wondering whether or not Stan Van Gundy will get a fifth year. Stan just noted he will meet with owner Tom Gores. They will sit down and chat. Tom Gores talked with the media not too long ago and said, yes, I will sit down with Stan. We will evaluate and I will make a decision from there. Before I talk about whether or not Stan Van Gundy will return for the Detroit Pistons and give you just brief thoughts on the NBA playoffs. As many of you know, who have tuned in throughout these 4 days here on WKAR's Current Sports, the story that we have been following and chatting about, the story is the Michigan State lawsuit from a Michigan State student who 3 years ago alleges that she was raped by three Michigan State men's basketball players. And when she went to the Michigan State University Counseling Center, those counselors discouraged her from coming forward. Well, a statement from Michigan State University was issued yesterday evening. And bear with me here because I want to read the entire statement. And I want to let you formulate your thoughts as I do so. Quote, late Monday afternoon, April 9th, 2018, MSU was notified that a Jane Doe filed a lawsuit against the university and unidentified Rose, employees or counselors of the MSU Counseling Center, claiming that she was raped by three unnamed Michigan State University athletes. And when she sought help, the university convinced her not to take her case to the authorities. The media has taken these allegations about MSU's response to her assault as established fact. Unfortunately, they are untrue. It continues to read, quote, here are the facts. Bullet point one. We have confirmed that in April of 2015, Jane Doe did visit MSU Counseling Center and that our records show that appropriate care and relevant information for a rape victim was provided to the student. We have not found any evidence or indication that she was discouraged in any way to make a Title IX complaint or a complaint to the police department. On the contrary, the student said she was then too distraught to discuss her circumstances. The counselor also suggested she visit the sexual assault program unit on campus. Bullet point two. In February of 2016, Jane Doe's visited the sexual assault program unit to receive additional services. She was provided appropriate services, including group counseling sessions, participating in a consultation with a sexual assault advocate, and scheduling an initial appointment with a sexual assault program therapist, an appointment which she did not appear for. Bullet point three. In October 2015, Jane Doe's father contacted her academic advisor to discuss concerns over academic performance. Through that conversation, the advisor learned about the alleged sexual assault. Academic advisors are mandatory reporters under MSU's policies, and the academic advisor promptly took the appropriate step of notifying the MSU Police Department about the potential assault. Bullet point four. The MSU PD Special Victims Unit took the report seriously and tried to reach Jane Doe to start the investigation and gather more information, but Jane Doe did not respond to their outreach. An informational email was sent to her that outlined resources available to her, including Title IX information, options to contact the Office of Institutional Equity, and relevant counseling services. Bullet point five. Jane Doe never revealed the names of her alleged assailants, nor, until she filed her lawsuit, did she publicly assert that an assault had occurred. To date, she has yet to exercise her right to make a Title IX complaint or contact the MSU PD or respond to the effort of the Special Victims Unit to learn information about the assault her father brought to the academic advisor's attention. And the final bullet point reads, quote, any information shared during meetings with MSU Counseling and Psychiatric Services is private and confidential. I want you to keep that sentence in mind. It continues to read, quote, when attempting to investigate the issue, MSUPD did not have names or any information about possible assailants, as Jane Doe never responded to their inquiry. At no point was MSU Athletics Department or the basketball program or head coach aware of or notified of the existence of a Jane Doe's sexual assault allegation. This is a message. This statement finishes up with a message from Michigan State University's interim president, John Engler. Quote, we are deeply saddened when any student comes to us as the result of a sexual assault. For the unfortunate cases where it does happen, MSU has the resources, tools, and expertise to respond. These resources are available to every member of the community, 24/7, no exceptions, said MSU interim president John Engler. That is the statement in full from Michigan State University concerning this federal lawsuit. I want you to let that marinate. And I want to hear from you. You guys heard my thoughts and how I feel about how this story has played out this week. I gave it in length on yesterday's Current Sports, okay? I'm curious to hear what the public thinks. I'm curious to hear what our listeners think. I also want to note this, though, because this was a story published by David Jesse from the Detroit Free Press. The headline is entitled, and this was published this morning around 8 a.m., Michigan State's rape lawsuit statement likely violated privacy laws. This article goes on to read, quote, Michigan State University likely violated at least one federal student privacy law and maybe another campus crime reporting law when it issued a statement Wednesday detailing counseling center visits by a student who is suing the school, experts said. But the biggest problem with the statement, experts and other victim rights advocates said, will be its effect on future students who need counseling center services or want to report a sexual assault. This is coming from nationally renowned victim rights advocate Brenda Tracy, herself a survivor of a gang rape by football players when she was in college. Quote, they are sending a very clear message. Don't report and don't sue us. I don't know how anyone on campus would trust the university enough to go to their counseling center or to report an assault. They would just think the university is going to out them. It's horrible. It goes to exactly why MSU is in the trouble it's in the first place. It shows their culture exactly. Again, that's a quote coming from Brenda Tracy from this article. The lawsuit filed in federal court claimed three Michigan State basketball players raped a student in 2015. We all know that. But then it goes on to say and detail the policy on relationship violence and sexual misconduct, saying that counselors generally are not permitted to report allegations of rape or relationship violence to the Title IX office or police, according to MSU's policy. So basically, this piece from David Jesse is saying that with the statement that Michigan State issued yesterday evening, privacy laws may have been violated here. It's a lot to take in, I know. I'm still digesting it myself. I want to hear from you. And again, I know right now our phone lines are actually going to be tied up. I want to give you guys the heads up on this. Our phone lines will be tied up because we do have Maya and Gene Washington coming on today's Current Sports in a matter of minutes now to discuss Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, a thrilling documentary and an eye-opening documentary that details how Duffy Doherty, head coach of the Michigan State football teams of back in the day, including the 60s, how Duffy Doherty and that football team broke the color barrier in the world of college football and the ripple effect that that moment had. So we'll talk with Maya and Gene. They will both be joining me in different locations via phone. But if you want to weigh in on this, because I want to get your thoughts, either wait until after the interview or comment via social media, facebook.com/WKAR News, or tweet me at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. What did you think of the statement? What did you think of the tone of the statement? And what do you think about the statement in relation to privacy laws? While you guys are weighing in, let's hit our first break. Again, when we come back, we will chat with two of my favorite guests of all time, Maya and Gene Washington. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports right here live on WKAR AM 870, 105.1 FM. We'll be right back. back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, coming to you on this Thursday, April 1, 2018. Ian Hawley, Current Sports Engineer. It is beautiful outside. Enjoy this weather, dude. It's about like 65. The sun is out. The birds are chirping. The sky is blue. Enjoy this, because this weekend, you know how crazy Michigan is.
Oh, yeah.
Come this weekend, you're going to need to dial that heat up to at least 77 back in the apartment, okay?
Yeah, I'm gonna drag my shorts out for the rest of the day today. I don't know why I even decided to wear long pants today, because it is beautiful outside right now. That was a mistake on my part.
Well, I don't know if it's that nice outside to rock shorts.
Michigan in April?
I'm not going that far. I don't start bringing out my shorts until it hits 70 at least. 60 is still a little too chilly to bring out the shorts, in my opinion. But hey, whatever floats your boat, brother. Enjoy it. All I'm saying is enjoy it, right?
Yeah. All right. The young men will be out here in the shorts, and the old timers can keep their nice winter clothes on. I guess.
Thank you. Yeah, I may get sick if I do that. If I wear shorts right now, I may get sick. My body's still adjusting, and that's the thing. This weather can fool you, man. If one time it's nice, one time it's cold. Next thing you know, you have a cold. So, all right. Well, hope you guys are having a great Thursday afternoon out there. Let's get to our two guests, two of my favorite guests we've had in current sports history, and I'm so excited to chat with them, because this has been a project that's been a long time in the making. But you guys all know, Michigan State fans, Gene Washington, who was one of the greatest football players in Michigan State football history. And he was one of the African-American players recruited by Coach Duffy Doherty out of the Deep South in the 1960s, integrating college football and winning national championships. Well, Washington's daughter, Maya, has made a documentary film about her father, his teammates, and what their history means to modern-day players. It's called Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, and it will debut this weekend at the Freep Film Festival in Detroit. To talk about this documentary and so much more, we now welcome the Washingtons to WKAR's Current Sports. Maya and Gene, how are you guys doing?
Great.
And that's the thing about having two guests on via phone. They don't know when to talk. It's so weird, isn't it? Like, hey, oh, hold on. Oh, go ahead. You go. But so good chatting with you guys. And I want to first start to bring some organization to this thing. It's so wild and wacky. I first off want to start with you, Maya. And I want to kind of dive into what this process has been like for you, what these past few years have been like for you. I know that you started this project, funding it out of your own pocket. What's this journey been like now, seeing it come to fruition?
I mean, it's surreal. It is so great to finally be at the point where we can share it with audiences. I mean, it was an uphill climb without any gear. Sometimes I felt like I was climbing up Mount Everest with my fingernails. But it's so interesting how anytime you go through any kind of adversity and sort of a long, hard won effort, how quickly some of the most painful parts are, you forget, you get that amnesia. I heard you all talking about spring. And it's so crazy for those of us who live in the Midwest, how, April 1st, we're dying, and then like we forgot all about it by June, and we're, on the lakes, and we're wearing our summer clothes, and the trees are beautiful, and we're saying, this is the best part of America. So beautiful to live here.
Right.
I'm kind of feeling that way about the film. So it's really awesome that we're, debuting in spring, and all I'm feeling right now is the love and support of the individual people and organizations who really, stepped forward and helped me get to the finish line. The fundraising has been the biggest challenge. I mean, we're still fundraising, but to know that we're finally bringing it to audiences, it just feels so good, and I'm so excited to share it with the community.
Yeah, and I'm sure many of our listeners, including myself, cannot wait to see it, Maya. And for you, Gene, in what way did you guide Maya in this process? And I'm sure those fatherly words of advice came out when Maya was having those challenges and going through those painful times that she just mentioned. In what way did you guide Maya in the process of telling this story, Gene?
Well, I would say the most important thing that I was very, very pleased and happy about is that Maya really got to know a lot of my teammates and a lot of our family members down in Texas. So the idea of pulling all of this together and getting all of those interviews from a lot of people that she knew very little about, and spending that time from a father's perspective, I think that was just unreal that she could pull all of that together, and especially my teammates that we played. You know, that we're talking about 50 years ago, we were playing together, and we were a team and a family, and so we got a lot of contributions, you know, Clint Jones, for example, Jimmy Ray, and so it's been a fun project, and it's been fun that she's gotten to know all of my teammates and my friends and the Vikings, playing with the Vikings. So that's been the most fun part of it, but and it hasn't been easy, but she has really stuck to it, and I'm very proud of her.
I'm sure you are. And you mentioned those teammates, Gene. I understand, you know, throughout the production process, you actually lost, sadly, a few of those teammates. Who were those teammates that have been lost during this time? And does that make this film even more special and important to you in your eyes?
Yes, it does. And, of course, it all started when we lost Bubba Smith. And that was about 7 years ago. And then since that time, there's been others. And she probably remember who they were in over the last 6 years. But Charlie Thornhill, for example, our linebacker from Virginia, mm-hmm. Roanoke, Virginia, and some others. And so it's been a labor of love getting to know the family members who was also involved with this. And so again, I'm just so proud that we were able to share and it's always been about family, you know, us working together and supporting each other. And so once again, I'm just so proud she was able to do that. But it's been a labor of love, so to speak.
Certainly. And, you know, Maya, I'm a huge fan of storytelling, obviously, right? I'm in the field of journalism, for goodness sake. But I love film. I love documentaries. And I've always just been in amazement when watching a documentary of all of the moving pieces and all of the background work that goes into producing a work like this. What were the challenges production-wise when it comes to the production process? And how big is your production team that aided you in filming all of this?
Well, I think what was really, you know, fun and challenging, you know, the fundraising stuff and the producing stuff was, you know, the very much the blood, sweat, and lots of tears. But the creative process was extremely fulfilling. But a real kind of monumental task. So in terms of the production team, those in East Lansing may have seen me and maybe two other people. When we traveled to East Lansing, I usually would have a camera person and a sound person and myself. So mm-hmm. a very small but mighty little team of three. We were out there shooting things, and that crew changed from city to city. So a small crew of three of us in East Lansing, in the Houston, Texas area, in Los Angeles, and then also in Indiana during the Big Ten Championship at the end of 2013. And from there, once we were done shooting everything, we had about a 4 terabyte drive's worth of footage.
Oh, my goodness.
And so hours and hours and hours of interviews and game footage and also archival material that we had to find and pull. And but day to day, once we were sort of done with production from about 2015 to the present, day to day, it's been myself, my editor, Anisha Acharya, who sort of really duked it out and just sloshed through and worked really hard and collaborated in getting the story tight and weaving our present day narrative as my dad and I sort of connect over football during the 2013-2014 football season, while interweaving the elements of his story that were resonant in the present day. And so towards the end of that process, we have, you know, a sound editor, a colorist, additional sound support, a composer, and others who sort of had their hand on the work, including some really special young women who found our project and came in as project fellows. So it was really exciting to work with young women storytellers and young educators who have been able to help us with different admin work here and there. And so it's been very much a lot of the time sort of a solo act
right.
for a lot of the tough stuff. But when we've had the resources and when we haven't, you know, there's been people who stepped forward and been a part of that, including a consulting producer, you know, very experienced producer, Selena Lewis, who's sort of been like a mentor, who's checked in on me, you know, throughout the process to make sure I was, you know, still breathing and that I didn't, you know, give up. But I'm really excited because we had limited resources, but we made the most of every dime, and I'm very excited about the outcome.
If you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Maya and Gene Washington. Gene Washington, a legendary Michigan State football figure who was recruited by head coach Duffy Doherty out of the Deep South in the 1960s, integrating college football and winning national championships. And Washington's daughter, Maya, has made a documentary film about her father and his teammates entitled Through the Banks of the Red Cedar. It will debut this weekend at the Freep Film Festival in Detroit. Before I get you both out of here, Maya, real quick here, you know, you talked about that production process. I'm pretty sure that you went through a lot of rough drafts before you were finally pleased with the final product. How many modifications did you make and how many tweaks did you make before you said, okay, that's it. This is the final product. I'm happy with what I have here.
I mean, I'm a perfectionist. I get some of that probably from my dad.
I'm sure. I'm sure.
You know, he was such a, you know, high achieving athlete and student and everything. But I'm going to be honest with you, Al. We were still tweaking things last week.
Wow.
So we finally, you know, got the print to the festival last week, and we have some other festivals coming up. You know, as an artist, I'm sure there's things that will always, you know, I'll kind of tilt my head at and think, oh, I could have done this or I could have done that. But really down to the wire have been just wanting to polish and make this the most beautiful thing I possibly can. And a lot of iterations.
Gene, how has this film helped grow the relationship between yourself and your daughter?
Well, it really, really helped. It's unbelievable. When I think about the Big Ten Conference, for example, and Michigan State University, now Maya and all the work that she had been doing, so she's very comfortable with the Big Ten Commissioner and with Michigan State, the whole athletic program there. The National Football League, who went to New York, and probably know more people up there than I do. and then also, you know, Minnesota Vikings, all of a sudden she's a very important part of the Minnesota Vikings now that she wasn't before.
So Maya's a Vikings fan now, right?
Yeah, she's a Vikings fan. As a matter of fact, as I look, and also the National Football, college football, Hall of Fame people. So there's a lot of people that I'm associated with that she now is really part of the family. They, as a matter of fact, everywhere I go, first thing they say, where is Maya?
They say, well, yeah, well, forget about you, Gene. Where's your daughter at, right?
Yeah, where's Maya? So, but at any rate, it's been a labor of love and of course, a father and a daughter in terms of getting together and really understanding each other better, if you will. I am so proud. So proud that she took this venture to do this, and it's an important journey that I made leaving Texas and Michigan State University. The commitment that Dr. Hannah, President Hannah made, and also Peggy Mudd and also Duffy Doherty, just to give us an opportunity, because everybody in Texas and a lot of the southern schools, they knew Duffy Doherty, and Duffy had a lot of great friends in that black athletic circle down there because everything was so segregated. But I got to Michigan State mainly because of Duffy Doherty and Bubba Smith and Bubba's father. Other than that, I can't say where I would have been. But I'm so grateful that the university has been so supportive. Especially in the civil rights, when all of this was taking place, I still think about Dr. Robert Greene, for example. The leave of absence in 1965 and 1966 that he took, for example, to be the education director for the educational program for Dr. King's educational program, and of course I remember the time when Dr. King spoke on our campus at Michigan State. So there's been a lot of people that's all a part of this that made it happen, and it's just not Gene Washington, but I had great teammates, I had a great coaching staff, and we were a family. And in all of the things that maybe I'm getting credit for, I think the credit should really go to my teammates, because we really were a team. But it's been fun to go through this, and once again, I'm so proud of what she was able to accomplish.
Very well said. Final question. This one's for you, Maya. When people watch this film, this documentary this weekend, which will debut again at the Freep Film Festival in Detroit, what do you want them to feel? What do you want them to take away?
Well, I think for all of our supporters who've, you know, followed the film since the beginning, I hope they feel a sense of pride and ownership, if you will, that they are a part of this film, that it really belongs to this community who believed in this story, who cared about preserving this history and making sure that it was seen by the next generation and sort of in the film platform. And for those who maybe didn't know about the project from the beginning and they're just seeing it for the first time, I hope everyone just takes away that sort of sense of pride in learning about where you came from, knowing who you are. There's the sort of opening credits. We hear Hank Bulla's voice saying, go back and find out where you came from, you know, an address that he gave students who were getting their varsity jackets when we were visiting the campus. And so I hope that those who share a part of this unique Michigan State story feel some pride in knowing that they are a part of a community connected to this important history. But for everyone to just really feel a sense of appreciation and really be able to go back and look at where they came from, where the sports they love came from, who came before them, and use that as a way of shaping how we move forward and face some of the next challenges, you know, we have before us.
Maya, Gene, fantastic job. Thank you so much for taking some time on this Thursday afternoon to join me here on Current Sports. And congratulations on this fabulous product. I cannot wait to check it out.
Hey, thank you
thank
so
you.
Much.
All right,
thank
have
you.
A great one, guys.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Maya and Gene Washington. I tell you, did you know this story, Ian? I know you're a young buck, but, you know, this is a story that prior to me becoming a sports reporter here in the area, I had no idea about. I had no, and I know I'll never forget the first time I met Maya Washington. It was actually when I was covering the Rose Bowl in Los Angeles, California. This was, my first year here at WKAR. And the current engineer at the time, my man, 50 grand, Alex Sharg, we flew out there and we were covering the press conferences and the festivities leading up to the Rose Bowl matchup between Michigan State and Stanford. And during the player and coach media day down there, I saw Maya. She was running around and getting footage and meeting different people, and I bumped into her and I introduced myself to her, and she said, "Yeah, Maya Washington. I'm the daughter of Gene Washington." And I'm sitting there saying, "Oh my gosh, the Gene Washington." And she's so nice, so down to earth. Same thing with Gene, so inviting, such a remarkable family. And I remember when Maya told me she was starting this project and everything that's gone into it and in the groundwork. It takes a lot of work to make a film. It really does. In Hollywood, you hear a lot of these movies that have been made, you know, years in the making prior to, you know, maybe filmed 3 years ago and is finally coming out, right? For Maya to stick with this and to start the funding out of her own pocket, that shows how bad she wanted to tell this story. And it's remarkable. But this story, did you even know about the story of integration when it comes to Duffy Doherty and in the 1960s Michigan State football teams?
I did not. I knew he was, you know, one of the first around the country, but I wasn't quite sure if he was the first or not. So that's pretty cool. To hear about something like that going on at MSU, especially with all of the negative, you know, publicity we've been getting lately, it'll be nice to have a feel good story come out about MSU football.
Yeah, well, without a doubt, and yeah, Gene was one of the African American players recruited by Duffy, and that really broke a barrier in the world of college football. But great stuff. Again, you can catch Through the Banks of the Red Cedar and its debut this weekend at the Freep Film Festival in Detroit. I also want to let you guys know that our very own Scott Pohl got a chance to chat one-on-one with Maya Washington as well. And you can, if you want to hear that interview, you can simply go to WKAR.org and check it out. A great chat with Maya and Scott as well, posted there on our website. All right, let's hit our final break. When we come back, we will put a bow on today's current sports. We'll get to a few comments from you all when it pertains to the Michigan State lawsuit. We'll be right back. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We have 3 minutes left in the hour. Really wanted to get to the whole, you know, final thoughts on the whole Stan Van Gundy coaching situation and whether or not. I think there's two questions here. You know, there's the question of what do you think should happen and what do you think will happen? I think they're bringing Stan Van back. I think that Tom Gores and Stan have such a close relationship that he wants to give Stan the benefit of the doubt. When it comes to Reggie Jackson not playing most of the season, he wants to see what Stan Van Gundy can do when he has his three horses and Andre Drummond, Blake Griffin, and Reggie Jackson fully healthy, all right? The fact of the matter is, Reggie Jackson, when he played this season, the Pistons were 27-18. Also, when the Big Three played, Blake Griffin, Reggie Jackson, and Andre Drummond, when those three were on the court together, the Pistons were 3-1. A very small sample size, I might add. And those wins came against lowly competition like the LA Lakers, the Chicago Bulls, and the Phoenix Suns. Look at the numbers. Throughout Stan Van Gundy's four seasons as head coach of the Pistons won 32 games in the first year, 44 in the second, 37 in the third, and now he finishes up this campaign in his fourth season with the Pistons with 39 wins. So I'll elaborate more on that topic on tomorrow's Current Sports. John Simon is now live in studio with me to close out the show as we have just a minute left. John, would you mind reading a few comments on our Facebook Live page?
Sure, yeah. So
when it comes to the lawsuit.
One of our listeners, Mr. Ben Grimes, just had a couple good thoughts to share. So while he did mention that he really does think that, quote-unquote, it is messed up that Michigan State University had someone commit a crime and then they felt that they didn't have to report to police or anyone. So he didn't like the university's stance on that. However, he did point out a few things that he found were fishy to him, that this girl that made the report, she had no evidence or proof. He thought it was a little fishy that she wouldn't name names. And that yet while she said that she didn't get help from these organizations around Michigan State and at the university, he still doesn't understand that there's a report that she also did receive the help. So it's just strange that there's a lot of conflicting things that are being reported here. So Ben just brought that up, and there was just some good stuff to share.
Okay, interesting. I'll piggyback off those comments and get to Ben's thoughts on tomorrow's Current Sports. And again, if you want to weigh in, you can do so even after the show by just simply going to facebook.com/WKAR News. Much thanks to John Simon, Ian Hawley, Gene, and Maya Washington. Same time, same place tomorrow. Be easy, people.